lifetime. 0722380712 is the WhatsApp line. And Auntie Jessie enjoying Maher Zain's Salam. Beautiful track. There are growing signs that the aid relationship between the global south and global north is changing. Many traditional Western donors, looking at the post-COVID world, are re-evaluating the role of aid while keeping a close eye on their own battered national interests. These changes, are they all bad? Are there opportunities for Africa? Online for comment is Professor of Political Science at Oslo University, Professor Dan Bannick. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
It seems as if the game is changing, isn't it? With the shrinking economic environment of COVID, a lot of countries are not going to have any spare cash. So this really does change the development game a lot, doesn't it?
Well, you know, it's been interesting times for Africa because it seems that almost every major world power is vying for Africa's attention. So it's not just the Chinese, not just the Indians. You still have, of course, the traditional donors like the UK, the Scandinavians. You have the US. But you also see Middle Eastern countries coming in. You see the entrance of Russia. So there are many people who claim that there's a new scramble for Africa. What we were trying to argue is that this is actually a critical juncture in many ways, that it does provide a renewed opportunity for African countries, for African leaders to actually play the field, to articulate perhaps a more nuanced agenda where their own interests are at the core. So it should not be just the major world powers dictating the terms of engagement, but a renewed opportunity for Africa to demand what itself needs.
Isn't a potential pitfall here the corruption, the corruptive nature of certain leaders, not all leaders, obviously, but that in some areas people are going to get caught short again. I can use Mozambique as an example where they have discovered gas, where the local people in northern Mozambique are not very happy about it because they're not seeing any benefits.
Well, that is definitely a major point. And ever since our piece was published a couple of days ago, that has been one of the comments that, you know, a lot of people are making, that perhaps one isn't entirely sure of the, or at least citizens aren't entirely sure of the capacity of their leaders to make informed decisions. Now, what is particularly interesting is the West has often been arguing that its aid and investment policies have a clear focus on good governance and anti-corruption efforts. So there is this idea that the West tries to promote much more of a focus on the problem of corruption, unlike what the West believes the Chinese or other actors don't seem to prioritize enough. Now, I've been studying also China in Africa, and the argument I hear from the Chinese is that, you know, we can't really dictate what countries should be doing. We can't really tell countries, you know, what democracy or good governance is. But our strategy, the Chinese say, is different in the sense that we don't provide a lump sum of cash that can be potentially abused. We'd rather just build an infrastructure project. It could be a road, it could be a stadium. And we'd actually rather do it ourselves precisely to minimize the ability to, you know, to reduce corrupt practices. So we see here particularly, you know, an interesting discussion, a debate, disagreement between, how should I put it, you know, more of the Chinese perspective to aid and investments and more of a Western perspective that has long argued for the primacy of socio-political rights, democracy, and good governance.
So is the Chinese approach working? Because just north of us, some African countries are deeply indebted to China, even if it has been infrastructure projects constructed in the way that you've described.
Well, debt relief is something that most African countries are talking about. There's been a growing debate in Nigeria, in Zambia, in most parts of Africa. In Kenya, there have been questions whether the country, the government, is in a position to repay the debts. So that is, of course, a concern. But there's another part of the story. You know, Afrobarometer, the pollster, has done several surveys, and it turns out the Chinese model or approach to development is actually quite popular among leaders and also among citizens, precisely because it is very visible. You have certain things that you can touch and smell, and you can look at it, unlike perhaps some of the more softer aspects of development that traditional Western donors have been prioritizing: health, education, things that are often funded through public or government budgets. And therefore, there isn't that kind of visibility as you would see in terms of Chinese infrastructure projects. So, but there's also another side of the equation. So African leaders have often complained that the West has ignored their needs for infrastructure. And a lot of people are actually now saying, what is the Western alternative? There's only one alternative for infrastructure in Africa, and that is China and this major, ambitious Belt and Road Initiative that the Chinese government launched in 2013. So there is this kind of polarized discourse. Yes, we need infrastructure, but there's nobody, you know, that is offering us these facilities other than China.
No, I mean, it certainly does open up a lot of questions. Do you think that what is emerging from all of this, that there are actually different modalities of doing business with Africa?
I certainly think so. And what recent evidence points to is that it isn't an either or. For many years, you know, now African leaders have been doing business with all kinds of world powers. So the narrative that is often projected in the U.S. or even in Europe sometimes, that the West and China are competing, isn't entirely correct, because they seem to be doing very different things. And there is also increasing evidence that China, India, you know, and other actors are now increasingly collaborating with Western powers to promote certain projects, certain investments in Africa. What is interesting now is, of course, you have the UK coming in with, you know, given that the UK has decided to leave the EU, you have a totally new set of challenges for the UK, so they're wanting to promote bilateral relationships. And what is also new is you have a rejuvenated kind of interest by countries like Russia. Now, all of this can be good, except that it can also be potentially challenging. Let's just take one aspect, for example, environmental issues. So, for example, Russia is interested in addressing electricity shortage on the African continent by promoting nuclear power. The Chinese sometimes talk about sustainable solutions like hydroelectricity and solar power, but they also are promoting coal-fired power plants. And it is that kind of inconsistency in investments, in aid policies, together with this concern over loans and their repayment, that I believe African countries and their leaders should really be looking at. And another important point, if I may add here to this argument, is that it is extremely important that African countries are united. You have major economies like South Africa, like Nigeria, like Kenya, that perhaps are in a position to negotiate with new actors, but smaller economies like Malawi, they're not in a position. So the extent to which the major powers in Africa can also help the smaller economies to become more assertive, to renegotiate terms, is going to be crucial in the years ahead.
No, absolutely. And would you say that, in conclusion, that the game really has changed, that the way that business is going to be done in Africa is not going to be the old way where it just seemed to be just one way, but there are going to be many different ways, as we've already said, and that in a sense, maybe African countries might just be spoiled for choice.
I think that's a nice way of putting it. I just hope that these new opportunities really do mean that leaders will think differently. It can't be more of the same. It can't just be, you know, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. I think there is much more of a positive narrative on Africa that is emerging, and I think one should build on that. It isn't just about problems and abject poverty. It is also a story of investments, potential, the enormous potential from Africa's youth, the enormous potential for tourism, all kinds of possibilities out there. But I do think leaders need to think differently. I think leaders need to talk a different language. They need to be much more assertive. I think it is also important for African leaders to say no. They can't just say yes to every project, every initiative that is launched. They have to be able to say what is it that they would prefer. It isn't just about the money. It isn't just about the quantity. It's also about the quality. So I think the ability to say no is going to be pretty important in the months and years ahead, even as COVID has shown that much of the progress in certain areas, you know, has been reversed. And I'm a little worried about that. So I hope that African leaders will come together and really see these overtures, these new forms of interest in a different light, and talk among each other, you know, talk to each other and figure out a way that these negotiations can turn out to be much more beneficial than they have been in the recent past.
Final question. Do you think BRICS is going to be a major player in all of this?
No. I think that is passé. BRICS as a group is under severe threat, and that has been for many years. There is considerable disagreement, and also there has been recent conflict between India and China. That competition, that rivalry is just being ratcheted up. Brazil has its own share of problems, given the rise in COVID cases and many governance challenges, and so has South Africa. So I don't see that group of countries necessarily going forward in a unified way. I think the world is seeing different constellations. Japan is perhaps emerging as an important player, together with other actors like the US and India. You have Russia entering the foray. You have China aligning itself with newer, you know, countries, even certain European countries. So we're seeing a totally new dynamic. I'm sorry to say, because that's my view, that the BRICS group of countries will not necessarily play a dominant role in the near future.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, your point is valid in terms of China and India. They're not happy cousins right now. Professor Dan Banneker, Professor of Political Science at Oslo University, thanks for chatting to us. Stay safe.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Drive Time 91.